One of the most dangerous and least understood forms of law enforcement, a wildlife officer, a game warden, whatever terms are used in your state. He's retired wildlife officer and he's still involved in policing. Welcome to the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. In the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, we are joined by special guests talking about their experiences, the realities of investigating crimes, plus those who have experienced horrendous trauma. Police, first responders, military, and victims of crime share their stories. Hi, I'm John J. Wiley. In addition to being a broadcaster, I'm also a retired police sergeant. Be sure to check out our website, letradio.com, and also like us on Facebook. Search for the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Are you looking for great products that could be game changers for people, for their physical health, for their mental health, for their overall well-being? Go to letpops.com. That's letpops.com. I take these Juice Plus products. They make a world of difference for me. Better energy. I sleep better every night. Full night sleep every night. Zero leg cramps and more. Many people will tell you about the wonderful things that these products do for them. Plus, it can be a phenomenal business opportunity. You can help people improve their lives and, for a very small fee, get a complete back end, complete website, zero inventory, no shipping, none of that stuff. Get full details on our website, letpops.com. That is letpops.com. Contact is from Michigan. We have John Borkovich on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. John is a retired wildlife officer, and he's also a current police officer. He is the author of two books, Wildlife 911 on Patrol and Nature 911 The Path. His website is wildlife911officer.com. Before we get started, John, I want to thank you for your service and for being guest on the show. Very much appreciated.
No, thank you, John.
I'll be totally honest with you. Like many people, I was a city cop. So like many people, I thought, you know, it depends on where you are, what state, wildlife officers, public resource officers, game wardens, whatever terminology people want to use that applies to their state, I thought they had it easy. I didn't realize that. I want people to understand this, the scenario. You're alone. You're in the woods. You're going after people with weapons that are breaking the law. And they usually have rifles, high-powered rifles. It can be very, very dangerous. Am I wrong?
No, you're correct. And people are very, very oblivious to that. As a whole, they don't realize just what we see.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a hunter. I went hunting once when I was a little kid, and it was not my cup of tea. I was more into fishing. And a funny thing is, I was really big into fishing in Chesapeake Bay until I got sober. Then I realized after I got sober, my boat was a 23-foot cooler with an outboard motor. It was not worth the time. You know, we didn't carry weapons fishing. But I never really thought about, number one, the animosity that people have towards game wardens or wildlife officers, the fact that they're armed, and then quite often they're willingly breaking the law by poaching. And to be totally honest with you, John, I don't understand poaching. So we got a lot to talk about.
Well, you just hit on about five things there that are dear to our hearts in law enforcement, John, even in a boat. I had three subjects in the boat one day that had 9mm, and I didn't know it. And I'm inside their boat, and I find this huge 5-foot-long hidden fish that was poached, and I find the overlimit of other fish. I didn't realize they had 9mm until 2 hours later. Our intelligence department, the state police, called me and said, "Oh, my God, those guys you had are going to prison this week. We're arresting them for a huge, huge theft ring involving party stores. And how they didn't shoot you, John, we don't know." And I said, maybe because I treated them quite well. Maybe because I arrested them, but I was firm, but I was very polite to them. So even fishermen carry guns in their bag sometimes, John.
And they don't want to see the game wardens. And I'm saying that term, and that may not be the politically correct term, but that's one that a lot of people use. And I don't want people to think negatively. I don't. I don't want to sound judgy. And if it sounds like that, please accept my apologies beforehand.
Not at all.
Corrections officers, a lot of people use the term guards, and people find it offensive. I don't know what is the correct term for wildlife officer, game warden, natural resources police. In Maryland, they're natural resources police. In Florida, they're Fish and Wildlife Commission police. In Michigan, apparently, they're wildlife officers.
Well, I've heard everything from fish cops to wood wardens, so I've heard a lot of slang terms, but the job is all the same. It's just protecting nature, protecting wildlife, protecting our environment. So the job description is the same. Part of the disdain for wildlife officers, John, I think comes from how some wildlife officers treat the public. As with any police job, if we don't treat the public with some respect and some dignity, you're going to get backlash.
You will.
And if someone has a fish that's a little bit too small, or someone's hunting license is back at their vehicle, instead of using that for education, instead of using that to build a rapport, some officers give tickets for those minor violations. And then your disdain starts growing. I hear stories all the time about these tickets you and I would never think about writing.
Right. No, we had a lot of discretion in what we did. And that's a term that's not thrown around a lot, but I imagine the wildlife officers do as well.
Oh, you're all alone out in the woods with six guys. Do you think it's a good time to use discretion? Of course it is.
Let's just paint the scenario this way. If you're like people I know, there's six guys in the woods, they're heavily armed, they're hunting, and they've been drinking since 3 o'clock in the morning. Alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And
so to use discretion,
yes,
is very important right then, John. Very important.
Two things.
Pick your battles.
Yeah, well, you've got to pick your battles because backup is oftentimes how far away?
A half hour to an hour away sometimes.
Yeah.
So so in other words, I thrived on that fact though, John. The fact that backup's 20 minutes, half hour away, I'm going to be good at what I'm going to do. I'm going to handle this situation. I'm going to immobilize a couple of the bad guys, and the others will learn from that not to fight with me. Or I'm going to be real polite and talk them through the case. In other words, don't rely on a backup coming around the corner. It's
right.
All on my shoulders, and I kind of thrived on that.
Well, here's the thing that I was trained by primarily Vietnam combat veterans, and we had a few Korean War veterans that were commanders. And one of the principles they taught us early on, and this was an overriding theme throughout my entire career, was treat everyone with respect until they change the tone of the conversation, especially if they're in front of their friends, especially in their house. So I'd imagine the same applies to you. If they're in the woods, they're at the hunting camp, they're in their boat, wherever it might be, respect is crucial.
Well, you were trained well by, military forces, because we call that the lion's den, right? You're in their house, that's their lion's den. You're in their hunting camp, that's their lion's den. So treat them with respect, as you said, John. I was asked on a TV show, what advice to give the new officers, John? Well, first of all, have compassion for everybody all day long. Just be the nicest, most friendly, polite officer. Give a lot of warnings, do a lot of education. But secondly, to have passion for your job. Secondly, have passion to protect the resource. Have passion to immobilize someone that needs to be immobilized. If you don't have passion for this job, John, just like your friends taught you the way you were trained, I don't think you could be good at it.
No. You would
I do not think without that burning passion, like in every job, if you don't have passion, you're going to struggle.
One of the questions I got to ask you, before we go into your experience, and there's a couple of stories we're going to talk about. Well, describe poaching, because a lot of people seem to have a different viewpoint on what's a harm. They're just out there hunting. They're feeding their family.
Well, very quickly, the difference between someone feeding the family and someone profiting from our resources or harming our resources. Real quick, I drive down the road opening day of deer season, and I see a young guy standing on the side of the road, and I wave. How you doing, buddy? Good, John. How are you? And his hands and arms and legs are covered with blood. And I look at him, and I say, oh, did you get a deer? No. Oh, did you cut yourself or something? Yeah. Where'd you cut yourself, buddy? Here and over here. He looked for a cut. Wasn't there, John. I said, okay. What happened? Well, he already poached two deer before the season began. They were in his house.
And we're going to take a short break. We're going to return to our conversation with John Borkovich to talk more about poaching and a couple incidents he was involved in. This is the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. I want to tell you about a product, actually a line of products, that have changed my life dramatically. Health products. I know many of you, like me, are skeptical about claims made for these nutritional supplements. However, these Juice Plus products have made a world of difference for me. The simplest, cheapest, least expensive product they have. As a result of taking it, a chewable berry-flavored product, I've had full night's sleep every night and zero leg cramps. I know, doesn't seem like a lot, but getting good night's sleep and having a stable mood helps me quite a bit. You can get more details about Juice Plus products at letpops.com. That's letpops.com. And for those of you looking for a great business opportunity, check out letpops.com. This is Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Return to our conversation with John Borkovich. John is a retired wildlife officer in Michigan. He's also a current police officer. He's author of two books, Wildlife 911 on Patrol and Nature 911 The Path. His website is wildlife911officer.com. And I apologize for cutting you off. We had to go to break. We're talking about poaching, and you had this incident where this guy was covered with blood. And please pick up on this story from there.
Sure. He looked for the cut, which he didn't have. So I said, okay, my friend, let's see what you shot. He took me to his house, and he had, quote, illegally shot two deer before the season got going in the morning. So, John, I knew this family. They were a poor family. They really needed to meet. And I look at this young man. He's in his 20s, and I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. Do you have a hunting license? Nope. Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you keep both of those deer you shot, and let's go up and buy yourself a hunting license. And that was it. And the point is, to me, there's a little bit of wiggle room to treat people accordingly to their station in life. I'm not saying it's right to go killing everything in sight, but they weren't wasting the meat. They weren't selling the meat. They were eating the meat. And they needed it for their family, John. So that one instance kind of explains the difference between slob hunter, which I had guys one time, they shot 100 deer and only ate three of them, John. They were on a killing spree. And that's disrespecting nature right there. That's disrespecting our wildlife. That's a far cry different than this kid who shot two deer to feed his family.
It's a big difference.
I always try to keep that in mind.
And the only thing I can compare this to, and like I said earlier in the conversation, I'm not a hunter, and I don't have a mindset of a hunter. If I had to eat, I would. But I did a lot of fishing. And in Maryland, when I was much younger, they had a moratorium from the state for catching striped bass, or we call rockfish in Maryland. And for a long time, you could not. And you couldn't even use the lures. And if you got caught with a rockfish on your boat, not only would you be arrested, fined, ticketed, your boat would be seized, your car would be seized, or truck would be seized. They would take everything. And I get it. Well, the reason why they did that is because they were in such short supply. The population was devastated. In the Chesapeake Bay.
Well, what you just described was our ecosystem and our renewable natural resources, John. Those female fish that are full of eggs, if somebody catches them or shoots them or spears them or nets them contrary to seasons and catches them when they're full of eggs, that's thousands of eggs that aren't being laid and hatched to provide more fish for the following year. So you almost in this job, you have to ask, what's the reason for the law? Well, why am I going to arrest this person? And then on top of protecting the resource, John, I start asking myself the questions. Did this person knowingly commit the violation? Did this person do it on purpose? Did this person choose to break the law, or did this person make a mistake? And again, in all law enforcement, I think there's a little bit of room to treat people according to their actions. If somebody literally made a mistake and caught a rockfish and thought it was a rock bass, and I said, "You're catching fish? Oh, here it is right here." And they're not hiding it. They're not lying to me. Well, then I think there's some room to give that person a warning and educate them. But when I said, "You catch any fish?" they said, "No. But I've been watching with binoculars for 2 hours, and they got 40 rockfish."
What's Yule say about police work? Truck. You don't ask the questions unless you already know the answers.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, pardon the pun, it's a fishing expedition if you just ask a bunch of questions. Yeah.
Exactly. But when you know the answers, it's so fun to ask the questions.
It is. And people incriminate themselves all the time. I want to go into two stories in particular. One is you were hit by lightning, and obviously it's a miracle that you survived. Tell us about that.
Well, I guess it goes back to having passion for the job. Having so much passion, John, I did stupid things in my career. We all have, because we feel the need to do our job with some fire, right? So I saw a couple knuckleheads driving an old truck that had a stove and refrigerator in the bed of the truck that were all rusted. And they're driving out in the woods. So I'm like, well, I know what they're going to do. They're going to dump it out in their woods and litter. Well, it was pouring rain out, and I had to wait until they dumped it out before I arrested them. So I had to walk up toward their truck so they wouldn't see my patrol truck. I'm standing there in the rain, and I can hear lightning, the thunder, and I see lightning. Well, we were all taught at a young age, you can tell how far away a storm is by how many seconds between them. Thunder and the lightning, correct? Well, it was three seconds. Well, pretty soon it was 2 seconds. Pretty soon it was 1 second, John. And I'm so stupid, I wanted to make a case more than I wanted to stay out of the lightning storm. The next time the lightning hit, it hit right next to me, an oak tree. And it was kind of fascinating in a way. It was everything lit up. Well, part of the lightning went in my titanium plate in the middle of my bulletproof vest and exited my femoral artery. Not the whole bolt, or I wouldn't be talking to you today, but some of the lightning zapped me, and I ended up with blood clots, and I ended up, you know, in the hospital, and they thought I was going to die and thought I was going to live. Anyway, I lived. I recovered totally, and I have had plenty of foot chases since then where I get to run people down. But that story comes up a lot when I'm trying to tell young people to have passion for their career and for their lives. My passion, unfortunately, put me in a dangerous position, but I'd probably do it again, John.
Yeah.
I think it's part of who I am. I love the outdoors, and I love wildlife, and I love our environment. I'd probably take that chance again.
Funny thing, but I thought this morning, back when I was a young police, there used to be a billboard in Baltimore, and it was a picture of a really dark, scary alley and a profile of a police officer. And it said, you wouldn't go down this alley for $1 million, yet our police officers do it for a lot less. And I think when I started, I was making $13,280 a year. And part of my thing, and it took some time, it wasn't right away, I must have loved chasing murderers armed with guns into alleys because I did it all the time. Yet, asking a girl I didn't know to dance across a crowded dance floor in a nightclub was paralyzing to me.
Your passion is protecting people and property, and you took that challenge at that dark alley.
Yeah.
And that's what we do when we're good officers. I know some officers that shy away from that alley. I know some officers that shy away from 300-400 with guns. I don't think they're in the right profession, John. I think you need to have that feeling for others and for wildlife to do a good job on either one of these jobs.
Well, you certainly had to have, what's the old saying? And I was trained this in the academy, complacency kills, and it kills all the time. So we always had to be smart. And one of the things that the old timers, the Korean War and Vietnam War veterans said was, you know, you can't fight your way out of a situation. Doesn't matter how big you are, how strong you are, how good a cop you are, how good of a fighter you are. You're going to run into someone who's crazier, stronger, luckier than you, and it's lights out. And it could be game over for you. So we had to learn our biggest muscle, which was our brain, not our biceps, not our fists, our brains. We are talking with John Borkovich. John is a retired wildlife officer from Michigan. He's our current police officer. He is author of two books, not one, two. Wildlife 911 on patrol, and Nature 911 the path. His website is very easy to remember, wildlife911officer.com. When we return to our conversation with John, he's going to talk us through, here to talk about it, being hit by lightning and surviving. He's going to talk about his encounter with armed poachers who happen to be illegal immigrants. This is the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. If you want to be a guest on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, simply contact us. It couldn't be easier. You can send us a message on Facebook. Look for and like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show page or email jay@letradio.com. That's jay@letradio.com. Turn our conversation with John Borkovich on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. John is a retired wildlife officer from Michigan. He's also a current police officer, author of two books, Wildlife 911 on Patrol and Nature 911 The Path. His website is wildlife911officer.com. Before we get into the conversation about the armed illegal immigrant poachers, I got to say this. It's a miracle you survived being struck by lightning. I get that it could have been much worse, but how long did it take you to recover? And do you still feel the results of that incident?
I'm embarrassed to say I would still wear one of those compression socks on my right calf. No one knows it, John. Under my uniform, you'd never know it. It took 5-6 months, but it sure was a good feeling when I went back to work and had no restrictions, no limitations. I still make sure, I wear that compression sock because I have a hole through my femoral artery, which caused the blood clots,
right.
And it's still there, but I'm fine. But again, it's the price we pay to do what we believe in, John.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you are here to talk about this, and the way that is not lost on me, because many people do not survive lightning strikes, no matter how close they are or how far they are, especially when you get a steel plate and exit the femoral artery. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, but the femoral artery is no joke. I mean, I think you've got, 4 or 5, maybe 6 minutes before you bleed out.
Oh, yeah. It was interesting. The blood just went around the hole, went right around the other, found its way around the hole, right through, like a little 22 hole right through my femoral artery.
Now, we had an incident.
It was interesting.
And we talked about this earlier, and I want to paint the picture. John is a solo officer. He goes into the woods. He's armed with a pistol. Maybe if he's lucky, he has a patrol rifle with him as well. He's going after poachers, armed poachers, quite often under the influence of alcohol, multiples at one time. And you did that as part of your daily operation. But you had an incident where you encountered a group that was poaching. They were armed, and they were illegal immigrants as well, weren't they?
Well, it was a fun one, John. I think what makes it fun, and this might sound demented, what makes it fun is I did it alone. You and I were both trained to always wait for backup. Well, sometimes you can't.
Right.
Sometimes it's not easy. But anyway, John, I'm working hunters, and I got out of my patrol truck, and I heard an automatic rifle shoot a couple miles away. So, well, that's interesting. So I went toward it, and I'm going toward the section. It's like a 2-mile area with no houses, right? And as I'm getting close, I get a phone call from a local resident. Said, John, these guys, they're in full camouflage, and they got bulletproof vests on. They aimed an AK-47 at me. I'm going, okay, settle down. You know, where are you at? It was right where I was heading, John. It's the shots that I heard. He described the section. I said, well, okay, I'm right around the corner, buddy. You just, get as safe as you can, and I'll be right there to help. So I parked my patrol truck. I called my dispatch, and I told them what I had, and I heard so many officers answering up. State police, sheriff department, border patrol, DNR officers. But people are coming to my location. I'm in the middle of the woods, John. And my thought was, I don't want a bunch of police cars zooming here. I'll never catch these guys. They'll just disappear in the woods. So I did the stupid but fun thing. I went walking with my 308 and my sidearm. I said to hold on to backup, have them staged nearby. I'm going to see what I can find in these big woods. There's woods and fields. Okay, long story. I find a white pickup truck and there's body armor in it. There's blood all over the truck. There's rifle ammunition all over. Six rifle cases in it. I run the plate. Owner's a convicted felon. And they're all foreign nationals. Even the caller told me it's foreign people that are threatening with the AK. So anyway, John, I go walking, and I advise dispatch, a situation, there's six of them, I guess. And stupidly, on the fun side of the police work, I'm creeping around looking for these guys myself. And I walked right up on two of them. They got one rifle on a bipod. The other rifle's a 30-06. And they're laying down prone, shooting right in front of me at some deer. So I get close. I announce my presence. They fought a little bit. I put them both in handcuffs. They are yelling and screaming some other language at me. And I look up, and there's three more coming toward their location. This is right before dark. It's right in the evening, John. They're walking toward me. They're all in camouflage. Now, you have to have orange clothing on you. Firearm hunt in Michigan and many states. So they're breaking another law, obviously, with no warrants. But I see three camouflage figures walking toward me with rifles. And I'm like, oh, come to Papa. They walk toward me. When they get about 40, 50 yards, I look, there's one tree, John, right in this little field I'm standing next to. I went behind the tree. I set up. The two on the ground are yelling out to their friends. I say, drop your rifles. No response. Drop your rifles. No response. It got really tense. I had five people in front of me, John, that didn't want to cooperate. And for some reason, after 2-3 minutes of screaming and yelling and aiming my gun at them, they dropped their rifles. I made them walk to me. I gently put them in handcuffs. No, I'm sorry. I used my bootlaces on two of those. I got everybody handcuffed. They're laying flat in front of me. And I called back up, and they came from everywhere. End up with over 20 police cars and Border Patrol agents on scene. Do you remember, John, in the academy, the fruit of the poisonous tree?
Yes.
All that whole thing?
Yes.
Okay, well, all law officers know this. These guys came into our country illegally. As far as I'm concerned, everything they did thereafter was illegal. Because everything they did was illegal. They bought no licenses. They were trespassing. They were threatening landowners. They were fighting with me. They had warrants. Everything they did was illegal. And I end up with 48 charges on these guys. I mentioned I had five of them at my feet. One guy walked up and he even had a hunting license. He still had like four or five things wrong, but he was the only one with the license and he just gave up easily. But that one case just illustrates what could go wrong. The first two could have just stabbed or shot me. They had a couple knives apiece in their pockets. They could have gotten me. The other three really could have gotten me, and I won, though. But a lot of things in that scenario could have went south.
And I got to ask you this, John. Look, I never worked as a wildlife officer, but you're painting the picture. I can understand it. When you saw the soft body armor, you saw the blood, you saw six rifle cases, did the alarm bells start going off in your head that something could be really, really bad here?
That's what was so fun about it, John. It was right there. It was like, this is in front of me. I got about a half hour before dark. I've got to get to this situation before it's dark or we miss everybody. The alarms were going off big. And I took it accordingly. That's why I grabbed my rifle and really, really went on a hunt. And it was very, very intense.
Did you get a lot of accolades and a lot of, well, here's what would happen. The reality. In public, you'd be like, we want to celebrate our hero. In private, it's like, what is the matter with you? What are you doing this for?
Well, okay, here's my accolades. Why didn't you wait for backup?
Yeah.
You should have waited for, I know I should have, but I wouldn't have caught them all. And again, my passion was driving me to catch him. So I know I should have waited for backup.
I get it. And I'm sure the very first thing you would tell young officers is, in a same situation, do not do what I did. Again, you worked, you lived through a lightning strike, you lived through this incident, you're a walking, talking miracle. We are talking with John Borkovich. John is a retired wildlife officer, still currently a police officer. Don't even get me started on that. And he's author of two books, Wildlife 911 On Patrol and Nature 911 The Path. His website is wildlife911officer.com. We've got so much more coming up on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You can find us on Facebook. Look for and like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show Facebook page. And if you're on the Clubhouse drop-in audio chat app, be sure to look for me and follow me. My name's John, the letter J, Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y. You can also search for at L-E-T Radio Show. That's John J. Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y, at L-E-T Radio Show on the Clubhouse drop-in audio chat app. Back to our conversation with John Borkovich on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. John is a retired wildlife officer from Michigan. He's a current police officer. We will talk about that in a moment. As much as people need to understand, I don't understand. He's author of the book, two books, Wildlife 911 On Patrol and Nature 911 The Path. His website is wildlife911officer.com. Got to ask you this, John. How many years were you a wildlife officer?
27.
27 years. After that, you retire. You don't move to Florida. You don't loll in the sunshine, flop around on the beach. You decide to become a police officer, right?
Oh, I decided to become a general law enforcement officer at that point. So the passion continued, John, even in the general law enforcement job to this day.
I get the adrenaline. Seriously. I get the fun. Look, what's the old saying? You get a ringside seat to the best show on earth. And there are times, and a friend of mine, a guy I worked with in the Baltimore Police Department, sent me a message the other day. He said, do you ever have dreams about the job? Do you ever have nightmares, but mostly dreams about the good times and people you miss? I'm like, yeah, I do. The old saying is, look, I don't miss all the monkeys, but I do miss a lot of the clowns I worked with. And I when I say clown, that means it's a compliment.
It is a compliment. Even some of the public's fun to work with.
Oh, they're the best people out there. We had such great. I had horrible experiences and lots more great experiences. There's no comparison.
Exactly. I think that's what led me to write the books, John. It's so many good cases and so many humorous contacts with the public and good contacts, along with my job and writing the two books. Now I've become a speaker where I go on and promote proper use of nature, proper use of our environment. I speak to school kids and libraries and young officers everywhere and tell them, please garner the passion to do a good job.
Yeah. See, no matter what it is.
Whatever you go into.
Well,
what your profession is.
I had a conversation with one of my radio bosses today, and he said, you know, certain things that seem to be lost with young people today, and I'm avoiding broad stereotypes, but one is make your boss look good. Have passion for what you do. Realize this. Mm-hmm. No one else is going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself. That means the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm sure you saw all three when it came to being a police officer, whether a wildlife officer or as a current police officer.
I saw it all, and that's what makes the books interesting. I mixed in a lot of humorous stories, too. But, John, I still get invited to people's weddings and their kids' graduation open houses of people whom I've arrested. Again, by treating people with dignity and treating people fair. That's not to say I wasn't rough on some people that needed it. But most people, I could just treat them fair, and here, you're going to get arrested today, and here's your ticket, whatever. And they still like me. They still want to. They want to ask me all the time. Am I in your book? Did you write in me? Did you put my name in your book, John? So must have done something right if they want to be in my book and want to talk to me, John.
One of the things, and I got to ask you this, is part of American history. We talk about revenuers and moonshiners and all that stuff, and Woods is something I think of. And there's an animosity towards law enforcement, and some of that I think that carries over into the wildlife officers, the DNR police, the natural resources police, the game wardens. Is there anything, and by the way, regular police, city police like us, we have our fair share of bad history too that we're trying to overcome. But is there any relation to that in your experience?
Tremendous relation. From, again, early in my career, I learned that not everybody's bad. So then my bedside manner was such that, hi, how you doing today? How you folks? Oh, did you get any fish? Did you? And the way I approached the public earned respect back from the public, John. Ted Nugent found me because of that. And I do a lot with him, podcast, and I go to his house. And he doesn't want to be harassed by DNR officers, right? He likes to just go do his own thing. Because of my approach to the public, I think I'm making inroads toward healing and mending some of the bad relationships that you kind of alluded to there.
Yeah.
I think the more I can treat the public well, I was asked once at NRA's annual meeting in front of thousands of people, do you need more money, officer, or do you need more training, or do you need more equipment to protect our natural world? And I said, I don't need any one of those three. What I need is the public to want to help us protect what we love. How you do that is you treat the public well. They in turn want to help me do my job to catch the real bad guys. And that relationship, I think it's growing, that let's get those 12 million hunters all on our side to protect the deer, let's say, or protect the rock bass or the whatever tarpon or whatever fish you're trying to protect. Let's recruit an army of good people. And how you do that is by treating them well and professionally.
So when did you start writing your books? By the way, two of them, Wildlife 911 on Patrol and Nature 911 The Path. What prompted you to say, I'm going to become an author?
I mentioned you and I could talk for 5 hours right now. I only touched on a couple stories. I have so many stories. And again, because I wasn't bogged down, John, with the minor cases and the small type arrest, I had more time for big cases, which in turn gave me more major cases. So case after case, I kept saying, wow, that's a really good case. Pretty soon I thought, well, I better write a book so I can show the public what really happens out there. And that it was like 4 or 5 years ago, I wrote my first book, and then the second book just came out 3 or 4 months ago. I've already got a third one, a third of the way through, and there's just more and more and more information to put in these books.
I'm fascinated by these stories, to be totally honest with you. And every now and then I'll watch some of the different game warden so-called reality shows that are unscripted on television. And I'm just amazed at what they do. And by the way, I appreciate all that you do. As an older guy, when I was younger, I may not have thought. And the reality is I was so selfish and self-centered. I didn't think beyond my little scope of things. So I didn't really put into proper perspective why poaching laws, why fishing laws, how it impacted other fish populations, the oysters in the Chesapeake Bay and all these other things, which affected the levels of pollution. I didn't give it much thought. I do now. So you were older and were you retired when you started writing these books, or were you starting that towards the end of your career as a wildlife officer?
I took some written notes down right to tail end of my career, but it wasn't until a year or two after that I said, you know, I can't give this up. I need to let the public benefit from my knowledge and my type cases. And that's when it really started to take off. Now I go to several states, John. I've actually befriended the Amish community. They have me in many states where they thirsty to hear about poaching, thirsty to hear about different cases. So Now it's literally, I've booked libraries all over. And again, it's the message behind what we do for a living, the message behind why I was putting myself at risk, why I worked all the late hours, why it was such an enjoyable job. Because I love nature. I love the outdoor world. And I want future generations to also love that outdoor world and have that clean, healthy outdoor world to enjoy. So that kind of motivates me to really keep pushing this.
Well, we are blessed without a doubt with the natural resources this country has, with the forest land, with the animals that live there. But someone's got to preserve it. Someone has to keep the balance. And I really do appreciate all that the wildlife officers do. So your website, what is that and what can people find there?
Basically, the website is just wildlife911officer.com. It's just a website where someone wants to order a book. It's $20 a book. They just press a button and I mail it out. People buy them for gifts and presents and Christmas and things. But basically, that website is just, and also I get a lot of contacts. You know, my daughter wants to be an officer. What should I do? My son's going to college. She wants to be a conservation officer. So get a lot of very healthy communication that way, John. There's nothing else sold on the website, and you know, it's very secure. People from all, I think every state in the country, and even people in Africa have bought my book.
And that is wildlife911officer.com. John, I find our conversation fascinating, and I really appreciate your service. Thank you so much, and thanks for being a guest on the show.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for your service also, John.
You can find us on Facebook. Look for and like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show Facebook page. I'd like to thank our guests for coming on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. The Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show is a nationally syndicated weekly radio show broadcast on numerous AM and FM radio stations across the country. We're always adding more affiliate stations. If you enjoyed the podcast version of the show, which is always free, please do me a favor and tell a friend or two or three. I'll be back in just a few days with another episode of the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and Podcast. Until then, this is John J. Wiley. See ya.